Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rurkraut.
And today we have a fun October episode, or Hitchcocktober, rather. We will be talking about a number of Hitchcock classics, and this is part of our Frequent Collaborator series. So we've done a few episodes so far this year of some of cinema's greatest frequent collaborators. And this week we'll be talking all about Alfred Hitchcock and his costume designer, Edith Head. So they collaborated on 11 films. And as a costume designer, I think she is one of the most well-known. And certainly she paved the way for some of our greatest working costume designers today. So I'm excited to talk about some of these classic looks. We have great actresses here, Grace Kelly, Ingrid Bergman, Tippi Hedren. So I'm really, I think, looking forward to this.
Yeah, we've mentioned Hitchcock and his films a couple of times over the years. So he's definitely one of our favorites that we like to return to. And I think October is a perfect time for that. And so looking at his filmography and these collaborations with Edith Head, I think just came naturally that we cover her because she is so influential, not only to Hollywood, but to fashion statements of different decades, and things that she would do on screen were picked up by the American fashion industry. It's so interesting in researching her career and where she moved studio-wise or who she worked with, but Alfred Hitchcock was the director that she worked with most, even more than Billy Wilder, and she is the most decorated costume designer in Hollywood history, both in nominations and wins. And we could have a whole episode just about her and thinking about other Best Picture winners or so many other nominees, because here this collaboration barely amounted to much between them if we're looking at the Oscars, which seems crazy, especially as we'll talk through all of the different memorable outfits from these movies. I mean, you can't think about some of Hitchcock's films, or just you say his name and you think of different dresses or suits or pantsuits that many of, they were actresses that Edith Head was designing for, but many of the actors in his film. So I think that is also a testament to her work and just who she was in Hollywood. I think she has a fascinating entry into the industry, and we'll again focus on the 30 years that she worked with Hitchcock, but I totally recommend looking into her past and other films because it again, I think, just shows how important she was to Hollywood and what Hollywood looks like to us when we think back on different eras.
Yeah. And if you're familiar with old Hollywood, I'm sure the name Edith Head rings a bell. You've seen that title card, especially because in so many of those films, the credits come at the beginning. So her Oscar history. So you mentioned her being the most decorated costume designer. So she has 8 wins and 35 total nominations. Her wins, we'll just run through them quickly, were for The Heiress, All About Eve, Samson and Delilah, A Place in the Sun, Roman Holiday, Sabrina, The Facts of Life, and The Sting. So really stretching from the 40s all the way into the 70s, she left her mark on Oscar history for sure. And she and Hitchcock, she only has one nomination for her work with him, and that's for To Catch a Thief, which we'll talk about, which maybe that is her best work with him. But I think when I think of Hitchcock's films, the reason why also, aside from just the glamour of some of these actresses, we think of costumes is because costumes and her work are really essential to understanding the characters and really getting to know them. And especially, I think, when we think about the women in his films and how important it is to really understand their motivations. And so much of that is actually understood through what they're wearing. And she actually worked on over 1,000 films throughout her career. I don't understand how that's even possible, but I saw that on TCM and I was absolutely shocked. So not necessarily as the head costume designer, but just the films that she gave notes on, or maybe the ones that she worked her way up on. And I love the way that her career got started because she was a teacher at an all-girls school in LA, and she put herself through art school so that she would actually be a better teacher. And that was how she found her way into the art department. She wasn't able to sketch people wearing the costumes, so she actually had one of the other teachers sketch for her so she could get the job at the studio at the time, which I think is just amazing, right? Fake it till you make it. And she really did just work her way up. And so much of it was because a lot of the men at the time did not see her as a threat. And she really understood how to work with women. She was a workaholic. She worked 7 days a week when she was at Paramount, just learning and gaining a good reputation with the leading ladies that she was dressing. And so much of that, if you read about her, it's understanding their different body types. And she liked to teach women in particular just how to make themselves feel good in their outfits and how to be able to hide things that they wanted to hide. And that's something I think that the other costume designers who, you know, we think about the field now as being really dominated by women when we look at tech nominations at the Oscars. But back then when she was working, that was not the case at all. And we think of people like Barbara Stanwyck. She really didn't like how long-waisted she was. And Edith Head helped her with that and helped her disguise that. And Bette Davis, she helped her with the fitting on her outfits. The only actress I saw that she had issues with was Claudette Colbert. And that was because her mother was a really good seamstress. And so she was very particular. And they ended up clashing quite a bit. But most actresses really enjoyed working with her. And her favorite was Grace Kelly. So we'll spend some extra time, I think, on those films today, too.
Yeah, when you look at costume design, and maybe it's just through the years, women were given more opportunities. But definitely today, when you think of the top costume designers, you're thinking of Edith Head or Sandy Powell or Catherine Martin or Colleen Atwood, or again, just the names that come to mind are women. So to read that in 1938, she became the first woman to become the chief costume designer at Paramount. That was such a feat, and that seems shocking that it was a feat. But again, it was a different time. Her having to, again, yeah, fake it, cheat her way into the system, who later, when people found this out, applauded her for that. And because of her ethic, what she was able to accomplish, again, is something that we still celebrate today. And I think it's fascinating because you look at Edith Head, if you've never seen her, and this is speculation, it's not confirmed, but in The Incredibles, you have Edna Mode, and her look is really who Edith Head looks like or looked like she was modeled after. She has that very signature bowl cut almost, and those glasses. And I loved reading that those blue tinted glasses, she used those, and again, all the photos of her have them, because when she was designing black and white films, those would help her show her what those colors would look like on screen. And a lot of the movies,
so cool,
yeah, we'll talk about today, are in color. But her career started way before she started working with Hitchcock. And I think what he was able to accomplish with her, they worked very similarly together. They were very strict and they bonded over that, basically. So because Head was at Paramount back in the day, they had contracts and you worked at a studio, that she became more of a freelance designer and worked with him because he was at Universal and RKO and different studios, but eventually he brought her to Universal in 1967 when Paramount didn't continue her 44-year-long contract. So that's also fascinating and kind of mind-blowing that they didn't, but again, because of her talent was one that many wanted.
Well, and you talking about the blue light glasses, she was really detail oriented. And one of the reasons that she and Hitchcock liked working together was because Hitchcock would actually put very detailed notes related to the costumes in his script. So he might mention a color that he liked on a particular dress or how he envisioned it in the script, and that would really help her in designing the costumes, especially as she was still kind of figuring that process out. And she liked the fact that she could actually visualize what she wanted the costumes to look like based on what he wanted the costumes to look like on the page. And they also, I think what makes them a really cool duo is that they were really interested in their perception and their careers outside of filmmaking or their own projects. Like in the same way that he would later go on to do Alfred Hitchcock Presents and really, I think, become this type of director that everyone really paid attention to during his career. She also had TV and radio spots where she would give women advice on what to wear. You know, that famous line I was referring to earlier was how she would say, find the good qualities and hide the rest. That was the advice that she would give to women. She also gave fashion shows two tours on the studio lot. Can you imagine now just taking like a tour at Warner Brothers or Paramount? You're just there taking a tour and a legendary costume designer is there and just says, let me give you a fashion show with some of the greatest looks from my career or whatever I'm working on right now. And she also worked in TV a bit too. She designed Agnes Moorehead's costumes on Bewitched, which I love. So we think of her, I think, really in her relationship to many directors or actresses from old Hollywood, and I think especially Hitchcock, but she really tried to make a career and a name for herself outside of those films too.
Yeah, I have no idea how she found all of the time to do what she did. Movies alone, I read that she was on TV shows, again, giving that advice to people, which ran for seasons. And then there were stories about her on the lot and coming out of her office or house when the tours were coming by so she would be seen. There's just so much lore around her. And I think some of that will bleed into the movies that we talk about and those costumes. So I think let's talk about some of those earlier Hitchcock collaborations. The first, which came out in 1946, this is before we even had a costume design category at the Oscars. That doesn't come until 1948. So maybe that one nomination could have been two because of this, but this stars Ingrid Bergman and Cary Grant. So Edith had designed Bergman's gowns. And as we talk through these films, something to note is that a lot of the time she worked mainly for the lead actress because there were so many different, again, suits for men and women or just extras clothes that were being designed by different designers on the film. And she would focus on some of those main looks that you end up seeing. So here she worked on Ingrid Bergman specifically and her transformation from being this party girl into this spy character. I think something else that I'm sure I'll repeat or try not to is that there's always this chic quality to what she's designing. And I think in her best looks, we always have this timeless quality. And Ingrid Bergman is a name that most people know for many reasons, but she looks so elegant in everything she wears. And I think is dressed magnificently here in Notorious.
Yeah, I love Notorious. This is one of my favorite Hitchcock films. There was a series actually over the summer at the Paris Theater here in New York where they played a number of classic Hitchcock films. And this was one that I knew I had to see. And it just has that glamour that you think of with films from this era. I think especially films about spies too. And when I think of Notorious, I always think of the iconic key shot where the camera zooms in slowly and follows that key in Ingrid Bergman's hand. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is the costume that I think of from Notorious. Of course, you have Cary Grant looking absolutely debonair and perfect like he does in every single movie that he's in, especially the Hitchcock ones. But here, thinking of what Edith Head did, it really is that black, low back, low neck gown that Ingrid Bergman is wearing with those great earrings too and the necklace. She just looks absolutely perfect. You understand why she's causing trouble between these two men. And Edith Head actually had a great quote about Bergman. She said, "The job was tricky. The clothes couldn't be smart in the ordinary sense. They had to be right for her. Some women need accessories galore, jewels, furs, feathers, silly hats to look glamorous. All the things she hates. She looks marvelous in plain things, a smock or a blouse or a shirt or a schoolgirl's tailored dressing gown. Her clothes must have simplicity, skillful design, and practically no ornamentation. This is elegance in the subtlest sense." And that's, I think, what you get with all of her looks really here, all of the different dresses, especially I think her evening gown, really classic lines, and it just elevates her beauty even more. She's absolutely right. You don't need all of that extra for Bergman. The simple looks really, I think, are the best for her.
We're going to start sounding like La Roche on Project Runway of simplicity is best and just everything. This should be a PowerPoint because all of these images are so divine, but that's absolutely the dress I also think of. And I love her hairdo. It's like these, I call them reverse pigtails. I don't really know what to call it, nor do I know design terms.
We're going to try our best. We're going to Project Runway it.
Yeah, exactly. It's simple. She has this really small belt around her waist that accentuates her figure. But for being a black and white film, I think that's also something that she leaned into was, is that texture is a lot harder to come across. And I think that shows best with what she did with her dress here.
I think let's move on to our Grace Kelly collaborations. So next we're getting into the 1950s. So we have two Grace Kelly films that Edith Head worked on. And I'm just going to say right off the bat, my favorite costumes from Hitchcock Head collaborations are in these two films, Rear Window and To Catch a Thief. But we'll start with Rear Window. We've actually gone in depth on this film on an earlier Hitchcock episode where we also talked about Rebecca and Psycho. So definitely go back and listen to that. We can link it in the description if you want an in-depth look. I think this is one of our favorite films, period. So we talk a lot about it. But the star here of this film, aside from Jimmy Stewart as L.B. Jeffries in his pajamas and cast in that wheelchair. I mean, I can't forget Thelma Ritter, obviously. She's always perfect. Supporting actress queen. But it is Grace Kelly as Lisa Carol Fremont, as she points out as she's turning on the lights in his apartment. I love this performance so much. I think it is her best work. And it's funny because she won the Oscar this year for The Country Girl. But I think she's actually just fantastic in Rear Window. And part of the reason why this movie works so well for me is because of the moment when she buys in, the moment when she starts to get invested alongside him in what's happening in the apartment across the courtyard. So much of it lies in her performance, but you also really understand who she is as a character and her contrast to L.B. Jeffries because of her clothing. And I love that so much.
Yeah, and because the rest of the films, including this, are in color, we start to see all of those costumes pop. I think Rear Window is a favorite of mine for many reasons, and that includes just the amount of elegant costumes that Grace Kelly wears. Because L.B. Jeffries is stuck in the apartment in that wheelchair and cast, he doesn't have to dress up. I mean, I think for the 50s, he still looks way more dressed up than anyone would today. I think just being in their apartment, but she comes in with these lavish dresses and these suits that really only remind you of the olden days in a way. And every new costume she wears is an entirely different color. So I think the way that Edith Head plays with color for a movie that is fairly static, we stay inside their apartment and look out across the courtyard for the entire film. So with the camera, I think their collaboration and finding other ways to keep us involved and intrigued is by what's catching our eye. And a lot of that has to do with the saturation of the cinematography. But we have Lisa's green suit that she walks in and these dresses with lace, or they're layered with that. And again, it just makes her look divine compared to Jeffries.
I love the dress she's wearing when she walks in with the black sleeves a little bit off her shoulders and that white skirt. And she says it's fresh off the plane from Paris. It looks like it. It's beautiful. It's very 50s Dior to me. I just think it's so pretty. And the gloves. And she has such perfect bags in the movie, too. I think another highlight for me is that really beautiful black dress with the organza kind of cap sleeves or short sleeves. And she has the pearl necklace on when they're spying on Thorwald across the way. I think that is just an absolutely stunning moment in the film and a look on her. And again, like you said, a great point of contrast with him. Also, her nightgown, which she calls the preview of coming attractions, which I think is very funny and witty, especially for the time, a little scandalous. But when I was little watching this, I always thought I need a nightgown like that at one point in my life. That is like the peak of glamour. That is the best anyone can ever look is right there.
That's the one I love so much. And it's just so stunning. And thinking of that as an evening gown, it's like you're wearing this inside. Are you wearing this out? Because again, I wouldn't put this on for myself at home.
No. Well, and you think of now, too, the pajama trend of people wearing not so much pajamas, but silk pants and silk tops, like matching sets out and that being a trend. This is better than that, for sure.
Yeah.
I also really like the floral dress that she wears when she leaves to go across the way, because, and Hitchcock talked about this, too, and Head, because Edith Head, she strayed away from prints a lot in her costume design because she thought that it would actually date the film and that they were a little too trendy. So she stayed away from prints and did mostly solids. But on Kelly here, she liked the floral, and she and Hitchcock both liked it because they thought it made her ultra feminine and also feel very vulnerable. So when you see her across the way and she has that white dress with the yellow flowers on it, she feels like even more vulnerable to this man who could come in at any point and catch her. And I just like tricks like that from costume designers, again, where you're just seeing new facets of the character. Speaking of which, also, I love that she's wearing pants when she's in his apartment at the very end, and we see her lounging and she's pretending to read Beyond the High Himalayas. But when she realizes he's sleeping, she puts it down and she has her Harper's Bazaar. That is the best.
Yeah, functional clothing. She's transformed as a character. And I think, you know, with those flowers on that dress that you're mentioning, some of the colors, I think, is also thinking about the filmography as a whole, what can date a film or place a costume more in its time. And I think some of the colors that they use are done so sparingly because it dates it to, I would say, the 50s and 60s, which are when most of these films are coming out. And again, a lot of either the colors that we'll talk about are pastels or muted or vibrant in a way, depending on what they're doing on screen. But Thelma Ritter is wearing this, it's a print, but it's a brown dress, and things that are more maybe pale or just black and white, things, again, that have that timeless quality that you could wear in any decade. I could see really anyone wearing this during a fashion show or something on TV. Like, I could see that happening today with a lot of what Grace Kelly wears and some of these other outfits that we'll talk about.
So our winner for costume design color this year, because they used to divide the costume design categories between color and black and white. The winner this year was Gate of Hell, and our other nominees were Brigadoon, Desiree, A Star is Born, and There's No Business Like Show Business. I would say for me, like, A Star is Born, the version with Judy Garland, of course, and James Mason, iconic costumes in that. But Rear Window, I mean, all of these looks, when you think of film history, years later now, 70 years later, this is really, I think, what is holding up. And Edith Head did win in the black and white category for Sabrina. But I think we could have seen another win here for her.
Yeah, Rear Window had 4 nominations. I think it absolutely deserves at least a nomination here with these nominees. The only one I've seen is A Star Is Born, but I think the number of outfits that we've been talking about for Rear Window and for this movie's success, I would say it definitely deserved a nomination. Let's move on and talk about To Catch a Thief, again with Grace Kelly, but starring Cary Grant, another Hollywood icon like Jimmy Stewart. This is another collaboration that had so many beautiful gowns. Yes, beautiful gowns that Grace Kelly wears, but is stunning because of the cinematography in this movie. And we have quite a variety of different types of outfits, sweaters, gowns. I think the final sequence at the big party is maybe its easiest moment to talk about because of how lavish and extravagant everyone is. So this is about a film taking place on the French Riviera, and Cary Grant's character, John Roby, is an ex-jewel thief, and there's this copycat that is committing new robberies how he used to years ago. So Grace Kelly, who plays Frances Stevens, her and her mom get involved, and I think the mom is hilarious, played by Jesse Royce Landis. She kind of loves living in this moment and being serenaded by Cary Grant's character. But getting into the costumes, which one or which ones were your favorite?
There are so many good ones here. It's funny because each new costume, you just think, oh, that's my favorite. Oh, that's my favorite. How is she doing this again and again and again? I think the icy blue dress that we see her in early is just absolute perfection. I love the neckline of it and how it has this attachment to it that functions really like a cape. And as you see her moving throughout the night, it is just so glamorous. And that color is so beautiful on her. So that's my early favorite. I also love the swimwear. We have a couple retro swimsuits that I think are great. And I also think it's funny because, you know, you talked about how she should theoretically be able to wear the nightgown from Rear Window outside. Well, I think she should be able to wear the swimsuit cover up as a dress, because how is that a swimsuit cover up? It looks like the nicest dress you've ever seen. The black and white one.
Oh, yeah.
She looks amazing in everything. So it's understandable why Head loved to dress her so much. But I think it has to be how shocking that gold lamé gown is. Because here, I think we're able to get really into costume territory. She's not just designing these, you know, everyday looks or these elegant gowns. Here, she's able to create a costume for the character. And even with all of the other extras and supporting characters there in their masquerade costumes, you cannot look at anyone other than Grace Kelly in this perfect gold lamé. So that's probably my favorite. But I love them all. They're all fun.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at a photo of the swimsuit, you don't even realize it's a swimsuit because of how it, one, is shaped to her. And I love like how it's cut around the arms. But yeah, how that white drape just kind of flows off of her. And this is where we really start, especially with Grace Kelly, to get into like hats and ways she worked with different departments to accentuate her looks, and the hat matches her perfectly. The gold dress for me too, because I think you don't really expect to see them come out looking like this when they start the scene, and to see her hair done up, which is also gold, and she has this gold eyeshadow on, it just, everything looks larger than life. It brings you back to the past, and the jewelry also. There are so many beautiful necklaces that are diamonds and, you know, earrings that she wears, but there's just so much drama and texture in this gown that is feet wide. I mean, it's humongous. There's a moment where she's sitting on the couch with Cary Grant's character and they're looking out at the fireworks, and she has this beautiful white dress on with this diamond necklace. And again, so simple, but kind of like the blue dress you mentioned in the beginning, there's texture to it and it fits her really well. I don't know, the bodice is just made so attractively. I would give it a toot for sure. In the same way that this golden one is. It's, yeah, fantastic. Look up sketches. I would say this is, again, one of my favorites. Yeah, I think the Grace Kelly era is one that she really shined in her work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this lost to Love is a Many Splendored Thing. Our other nominees were Guys and Dolls, Interrupted Melody, and The Virgin Queen. Edith Head was also nominated in the black and white category for The Rose Tattoo, but lost to I'll Cry Tomorrow. So a pair of losses for Edith Head. I think we'll talk about how we feel about this one, maybe compared to her other nominations and where we would give her her Oscar later on. So not to step on my answer, but we'll get into it then. So moving away from our Grace Kelly era, we'll go on to, I think, some continued collaborations in Hitchcock's biggest decade, the 1950s. So we have a number of classics across the 1950s, including The Trouble with Harry. This came out, of course, the same year as To Catch a Thief, but this is this autumnal comedy, I will say, with Shirley MacLaine, John Forsythe, and Edmund Gwynn. Highly recommend watching this in the fall. I think this is actually a great Thanksgiving movie. It's like the perfect November watch. We also have The Man Who Knew Too Much in 1956. This is actually a remake of Hitchcock's own 1934 version. And this version stars Jimmy Stewart and Doris Day. And then we also have Vertigo from 1958. This is considered by many to be Hitchcock's best movie. It topped the Sight and Sound poll in 2012. And this stars Jimmy Stewart again, Kim Novak, and Barbara Bel Geddes. I love Vertigo. This is my favorite Hitchcock film. So I think we'll talk about it at some point in depth later on our show. But what do you think of this trio of films in regards to Edith Head's costume designs? I think we can probably talk the most about Vertigo because costumes are absolutely essential there.
Yeah, I mean, this is where we start to see some variety in structure and purpose for costumes. I think Vertigo aligns with what we've talked about so far because of the actresses. But I would say with The Trouble with Harry specifically, it's a movie that takes place in a little Vermont town. It's a pretty rural setting. It's a small community, and this murder happens, or really this little boy finds this man, his name is Harry, dead on a hillside. And all of these characters start talking to each other about this dead person and figuring out what to do so that essentially it doesn't have to be in the papers. They don't have to contact the police, and it doesn't have to be this big hubbub around someone getting murdered in their town. It's such a different type of movie for Hitchcock. It really threw me off. So I think that plays a lot into the costumes because she's trying to model these everyday looks, things you would pretty much buy in a department store for all of the characters. And, you know, Shirley MacLaine, she's a star and the biggest name here. And for most of the film, she's wearing this pretty modest blue dress with, yes, this deep V, but again, it's something that doesn't make her stick out. The only one that does for me is when Ivy is trying to impress Albert, and it's this more detailed, done up, more cocktail dress look than what anyone else wears. The men have suits on. They're great. That's just something of the time. Men always wore suits, but again, nothing is showy. And so that definitely contrasts with The Man Who Knew Too Much. Again, I think for Doris Day and Vertigo with Kim Novak, where, I mean, the first shot we have of Kim Novak's character in that movie is from behind. We see her hair in this like bee's nest and the emerald black gown that she wears with like a shawl over her shoulders. And that is just extraordinary, let alone this gray suit that is so iconic and, yes, maybe dialed back because of the color, but it's still styled up for her. And that's something that Edith Head did in contrast to Hitchcock which he ended up really loving for her character, or set of characters that, yeah, the mystery of this movie is getting at also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I completely agree with you about this period really pivoting into more of the everyday with a lot of suiting. And I think in The Man Who Knew Too Much, what works really well about the costumes there is that Doris Day and Jimmy Stewart, they're in Morocco at the beginning of the movie, and they really look like outsider Americans. They look like tourists, and that's through the costumes. They almost seem oblivious to everything that's going on around them at times. She is wearing this beautiful sleeveless shirt dress with the collar popped, which I love that look, but completely out of place where everyone else is completely covered up. She's wearing that. Her shoulders and her arms are showing. And then later when they go to dinner, she has this white and green, really elegant dress on. And again, she sticks out like a sore thumb. And I think that also really fits with Doris Day really playing against type here too. And I really enjoy that performance. I think she's really good in the movie. And I think the costumes just elevate that a little bit. So I think that that's not quite as stylish as what we saw in To Catch a Thief or in Rear Window with Grace Kelly. But I think the costumes really serve that character and really her performance really well. And Vertigo, so much of that is about the costumes. So that gray suit, what I think is so interesting about that is that Kim Novak hated that gray suit. She didn't feel comfortable in it. She didn't like it. Just a warning here, I'm going to spoil Vertigo. If you have not seen Vertigo, please skip ahead, come back, but I'm going to spoil Vertigo because it's essential in talking about these costumes. I know this movie is almost 70 years old, but just skip ahead if you don't want to hear. But when she's Madeline, she's pretending to be someone that she's not. And in those moments, Hitchcock and Head dress her in neutrals. We see gray, black. Often she is in neutral colors. The exception to that really is when we see her wearing red, when she's wearing Scotty's red robe after he rescues her. That's really the only time we see her in color until we get the flip. But instead, she's usually contrasted with other colors. So when we see her in the flower shop and she's in that gray suit, she has the drab neutral color on against the bright colors of the scene. Or when she is viewing that portrait, she's wearing black or gray at different times. But then later on, when she's Judy and she's brunette, she's wearing a green dress at one point and a purple dress at another point. So we're seeing who she really is. We're seeing the clothes that she actually likes to wear and the colors that the real person likes, and not the put on pretend version that she is as Madeline. And we have this one of, I think, the scariest scenes in a Hitchcock movie. I think this is a true horror movie for women in particular, but the scene when they go shopping for that gray suit and every single suit is wrong, when he is trying to make her into the woman he remembers, I think that is so scary and so well done. Just in the different options and in trying to find the right suit and why the costume is so important. I just love that detail and think so much of the brilliance of the movie is really in those costumes.
Yeah, I agree. I love that a lot of when she's wearing those neutral tones, there's a lot of color happening around her with the production design, with the camera. You know, there's that iconic shot of her in that gray dress with the green door, the green lighting behind her. Another moment with the gray dress, which I thought was interesting and I don't think is real, but when she's in the flower shop in the beginning, behind her at the counter, there's a woman helping a customer in that same gray dress, and it almost looks like Edith Head. And I was like, could she have made a cameo with a similar looking dress and just showing how different Kim Novak looks in it? Yeah, I liked reading that when she commented on how she hated it, she said it helped her stand so straight and erect the way that Edith had built it. And that's what made her feel uncomfortable. But then later on, we get to see her with this beautiful, huge white coat. It has this humongous collar on it, and it just flows off of her so well. I would want that. I feel like you would love this.
Oh,
we could see this being worn today, and that really tight-fitting black dress underneath with the heels. Again, the composition of her looks really makes the actress stand out in these settings where we're at the Golden Gate Bridge or around San Francisco, or there are a lot of rich colors behind her in a restaurant, say, or anywhere. So yeah, all of these costumes, whether they're in gray or in color, make her pop in different ways, which I like.
And one last note on Vertigo before we move on. This is another costume detail that is away from Kim Novak, but Midge's character, she's constantly toying with brassieres. And that idea of that being this constricting garment and this enigma to men, and it's something we're introduced to at the beginning of the film. I think that it shows this contrast between Midge as a character and her interactions with Scotty, and how Scotty views Madeline as a woman who, you know, might not be as forward thinking and who he can mold into someone that he wants. So it's there's so much to get into with this movie.
And with these three movies, so Edith Head was also nominated in 1956. The same year that The Man Who Knew Too Much came out for The Ten Commandments. This is when The King and I won in costume design and color. And she was also nominated in black and white for The Proud and Profane, which lost to The Solid Gold Cadillac. And then in 1958, she was nominated for The Buccaneer. And this is when Gigi won. So I think let's move on to our Tippi Hedren era. And I know you love The Bird, so that's from 1963. And then also we have Marnie from the following year.
I love The Birds. I think this is one of Hitchcock's most misunderstood movies. And it's funny I'm saying that too compared to Marnie, because I think that's also probably one of his most misunderstood movies. So poor Tippi Hedren. She gets the pair that I think a lot of people don't really care for, but I am actually a big defender of both in different ways. I actually just watched Marnie for the first time recently and was riveted. I think there are some very bizarre choices going on, but bring it on. I love it. I think it's kind of a late career look at a lot of Hitchcock's themes and the ways that he actually viewed himself, which is pretty gross. For just in case people don't know this, he sexually harassed Tippi Hedren throughout their collaboration together, and he went on to ruin her career after Marnie. So not a great relationship there. She did not like working with him. Though what we do get from her, it's a really interesting contrast to what Grace Kelly is doing. He wanted Grace Kelly in Marnie, actually, but I think what we see from these two collaborations, what I think of with both of them, really, we have another great green suit. I think that the green suit in The Birds is one of the most iconic costumes in Edith Head's career and across Hitchcock's filmography. So in The Birds, she wears the green suit for most of the film, really. We see it throughout the film. And later when she's bleeding, that red, the bright red of the blood, against that pale green of the suit. I just love the way that looks. And in Marnie, Marnie is traumatized by the color red. Red is what she is really afraid of over and over again. So again, we have that light, cool green against the red. And I just love the way that that looks for her. So I think those probably across the two are highlights for me. But I just think both films are so strange. I think what's iconic about The Birds is that we don't really have an explanation for anything. And it is just so creepy and eerie. And I love the sound design and the idea that nature will always be more powerful than us is one of my favorite tropes in horror, really, and themes that you can explore. And I think Tippi Hedren is sort of the perfect vessel for that. And I think Marnie, we get into Hitchcock explains it all territory by the end. But I was pretty floored by the revelation, and I think it works. But again, I think here we have Head moving into the 60s. So 1963 with the Birds, 1964 with Marnie. So we're getting a lot of those everyday looks. We're getting suits, we're getting sweaters and pants combinations, which I love. And we're getting really muted tones across both films. Camel, khaki, white, light green. And I think that really works with the visual aesthetic of the film overall, too.
Yeah, I think what's most interesting here that, you know, maybe it's a sign of their clashing collaboration, Hitchcock with Hedren, more so than Head, but there's a lot more conservatism that we see in her designing here. Tippi is, she's covered up to her neck in nearly every outfit that she wears in every shot. And that continues on pretty much into the later films that we'll talk about next. But Marnie, I would say, is more aligned with what we've talked about with different looks and different textured outfits, many dresses, yes, with those muted colors that you're mentioning. Whereas in The Birds, she has that one outfit and it is so iconic for the movie. Again, it's something that you can envision when someone says The Birds. And part of that was because she would be wearing it for days and it needed to be durable against the elements, against the actual birds. Yet she still looks elegant in that. With Marnie, I mean, her poor wig, I couldn't get past that. It just reminded me of Denise from SNL with the tiny hands, Kristen Wiig. I was like, oh my God, it's so bad.
It is. But you know what I thought of? So on an old episode of ours, I can't remember which one, but you made a comment about seeing Dakota Johnson's forehead and how weird it was to see her forehead. And I realized that this is generational. We're on the third generation. Tippi Hedren, of course, being Dakota Johnson's grandmother. And that's what I thought of with her forehead and the wig.
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, I guess apart from that, I think the idea of the movie is that we're kind of waiting the entire time to figure out why she's traumatized by red and has these flashes, which is done in this like weird visual effect-y way. But that also made me see things differently in that the red popped around her and that she was never wearing it. But when it was on costumes, you really noticed that. So despite her, you know, she wears quite a few white looks or white layered. She has this gray suit with a white scarf underneath. But it's still an interesting way that they get to play with color throughout the films. So in 1963, Head was nominated for A New Kind of Love. And this is the year that Cleopatra won. Head was also nominated twice in the black and white costume category for Love with a Proper Stranger and Wives and Lovers, but she lost to 8.5. And then in 1964, Head was nominated for What a Way to Go. My Fair Lady was the winner that year. And then Head was also nominated in black and white for A House is Not a Home, which lost to The Night of the Iguana.
So Marnie was a critical flop and a box office flop, despite Hitchcock casting Sean Connery, who was a major star at the time with the Bond films. Marnie really set him back a bit, and his confidence after that really started to wane. And that's when we go to our next three collaborations. So late 60s into the 70s, we have Torn Curtain, Topaz, and Family Plot. So very different group, I think, compared to the works that we've been talking about. I actually hadn't seen two of these films prior to prepping for this episode because I think when I think of Hitchcock, I think a lot about the 50s, into the 60s a little bit, and then before that, I think early career too. So this is an era of his filmography that is a little bit tough. And in their collaborations too, I think we're just not really seeing as much excitement. I think we'll talk about them, but really what's happening here is that Hitchcock also was pretty bitter about the way that the film industry was changing and how things were moving, especially because he thought a lot of the James Bond films were actually actively taking things from his earlier films, especially North by Northwest. And a number of other new films that were coming out were doing things that he had already done before. And I think he didn't really quite understand why he wasn't hitting the same magic anymore at the box office or with audiences. And these three films, you really see him, I think, especially in Torn Curtain and Topaz, we have two Cold War films that almost feel like he's trying to dig into what's so popular with Bond, but in a way that is just not as successful. I think especially with Torn Curtain, you have Paul Newman and Julie Andrews. Edith Head works on, she's the costume designer in particular for Julie Andrews, but the two of them just don't have any chemistry here. There just isn't that heat really between the two actors. And I think you can also feel Hitchcock being pretty disinterested in Julie Andrews as his leading lady, which is unfortunate, but I think that's part of the reason why this film just, it does fall flat. And I think the same thing really with Topaz. You have him, I think, being a little bit more inspired maybe by European films that were really popular at the time, thinking of Italian cinema and the French New Wave. But we have a similar issue here where you're just not seeing any of those risks that he took in his earlier works.
So I wasn't super low on Torn Curtain. I found it interesting as this political thriller, which he doesn't usually dive this deep or too deep, I would say, into politics in his movies, but he really went for it here because of the Red Scare. Paul Newman's character is kind of a defect after some sort of clash with the American government. And Julie Andrews plays his assistant slash lover in this movie. I think the movie is confused in ways because there's so much of the politics that the movie really shifts into that. And then it has to shift back into, oh, wait, they're a couple. They're in love. And so it really challenges the viewer in understanding what he's doing. And again, I think because it's different for him, he doesn't know how to handle that as well. And Julie Andrews, I mean, she's Julie Andrews. She's great on screen. I still loved her. She doesn't have a ton to do. There's a lot of her just pining for Paul Newman's character, who it's funny that the only time we do see him shirtless, he's on like the doctor's table and the doctor is feeling him, feeling his chest. And I'm like, at least someone is in this movie. God.
Yeah. Thank God. Someone got to.
Yeah, so costume-wise, though, with Andrews, they have to be concealed, and they're running away from multiple governments at this point, and they have to blend in. So that comes across in those designs. She's wearing this, like, slicker at one point that is beige. There's also this, like, caramel brown layered sweater and jacket that she's wearing that is elegant, but again, I think the movie is so much of the 60s that that kind of bleeds into many elements of the film or these films kind of not being as memorable, though I think her hair is great in this movie. With Family Plot and Topaz, Family Plot, there's just not as much. And Topaz, I think we get to see some of those sketches again that have multiple components and that are, I think, a bit more fun dealing with the 70s. This is our only 70s movie, but very much of the era and maybe dates it a little too, like I mentioned earlier, for multiple reasons. But there are some fun looks with the prints, like the jacket that opens, that reveals that pattern or texture underneath.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing really from Topaz costume-wise, I agree with you with everything you said about Julie Andrews in Torn Curtain. I think there is a really great costume moment in Topaz, and it's when one of the characters is shot and we get this, what I will call the purple dress shot, which is very cool. And this character, she's framed by this bold, rich purple dress that she's wearing. So that, I think, is one of those standout costume moments, I think, really across his later films. And then with Family Plot, like you said, we're really getting into the 70s here. I would wear Karen Black's outfit when she has the trench coat and the black turtleneck on. Very 70s, but that, I think, is just a really good look. And she also has the black kind of high neck coat with the black sunglasses and that blonde wig. I think that's really fun too. So I think even though we're not seeing, I think, like the elegance and the glamour of her works from the 50s, it's still good work. It's just very stripped down contemporary here.
Mm-hmm. She kind of looks like Faye Dunaway in those early shots from Family Plot that you mentioned, the black and the sunglasses and the wig. Yeah.
Yeah. It would have been a fun Faye Dunaway part, but she was making network that year. Talk about great 70s costumes.
Yeah. So in 1969, with Topaz, Head was nominated for Sweet Charity, and that lost to Anne of the Thousand Days.
So of all of the collaborations that we talked about today, do you think any were snubbed?
Absolutely. I would have nominated her for a number of these movies. I think we talked about that along the way, too. I mean, absolutely Rear Window. Vertigo, also, for sure. I think The Man Who Knew Too Much has potential, even Marnie or Torn Curtain. But a big thing we look for nowadays or see is that many of the winners and nominees go to period pieces or period projects. And that is probably what happened in a lot of these cases. But I think with those, definitely she could have earned a few more nominations, possibly even wins. I think with Rear Window for sure. Vertigo, possibly. I mean, also potentially even nominate The Birds. Again, I'm thinking more of legacy more than quantity in some of these cases, which, again, is just a criteria that the Academy goes for. But yeah, I think she did. What do you think?
I definitely think so. I think especially for Rear Window, that's a huge one for me. I think another great Grace Kelly movie where she should have gotten a nomination. And I would also, like you said, I think for legacy and for the importance of the costumes, like J. Crew has a sweater called the Tippy that I have in like three colors that is based on her looks in Hitchcock films. So I would definitely go with The Birds also, and Vertigo, of course. I think Vertigo should have won Best Picture in 1958 and a number of other things, but she at least should have gotten a costume design nomination, I think, there too. So I would at least say add nominations for Rear Window, Vertigo, and The Birds.
So if you could give Edith Head one Oscar for her collaborations with Hitchcock, which would it be?
I would go with To Catch a Thief. So I would give her the win for the film where she actually received a nomination. What she does with all of Grace Kelly's looks here, I think, is just stunning. Like we talked about, the gold lamé gown, that icy crystal blue dress she's wearing, all of the swimsuits, every single look that she wears in this movie is absolutely flawless and just communicates the elegance and style of that character on the French Riviera. It's absolutely gorgeous. So I would go with To Catch a Thief. What about you?
I would too. I think Rear Window is so, so close for me because of what it does for her character in that movie. But I think it does come down to the elegance and the versatility of what she shows in To Catch a Thief, which I think is just a little bit more than from Rear Window. And she really goes there. Like you had said earlier, she really goes costumey with that French dress in the end. And I loved it. It really shocked me. It brought this great conclusion to the film. And yeah, just seeing Grace Kelly and Cary Grant also, but her in all these different types of costumes and gowns and apparel. There's also this great, like, almost golfing two-piece that she wears earlier on. But yeah, if you haven't seen To Catch a Thief, I would recommend it for the costumes alone. I think it's also a fun little caper. But we've talked about so many different looks today. Go look them up. We'll try to post on social some of these sketches that Edith Head had made throughout her career. Again, 30 years working together with Hitchcock, 11 films. I think that's a career in and of itself. And they really blossomed, I think, because of both of their talents as filmmakers.
I'm so glad that we were able to talk about her career, talk about her collaborations with Hitchcock. So many iconic looks. And next time on Oscar Wilde, we have a special After Dark anniversary episode. We'll be talking about the 40th anniversary of Clue. You and I both really love this movie.
Yes.
I am Miss Scarlet. I can't wait to talk about this movie.
And I'm Miss White. It's perfect. Clue is just absolutely one of my favorites. Oh my God. I saw it in theaters earlier. If it's still out in theaters, go check it out. Thank you all for listening to this special episode. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Blue Sky at Oscar Wilde Pod. We have bonus content where you can find our next episode on Clue on our After Dark series on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde and updated nomination predictions at oscarwilde.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.